Welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPNTucson.com. 1490 AM on your radio dial, 94.9 HD4 on your FM dial. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host, along with me riding shotgun as usual, and my good buddy, Mr. Jim Mooney, Frontier Towing, for all of your towing needs. Been there, towed that. He just told me about towing down a motorhome down a freeway with a bunch of pack rats falling out of it. I'm telling you, this guy's into everything. I forgot something on the first hour. Today is opening season at the Tucson Speedway, and it starts, well, it's open season. Okay, guess, well, it used to open at 5. I don't have it on this flyer. But anyway, they've got modifieds, Thunder Trucks, Pro Stocks, Hobby Stocks, Bandoleros, Can-Am, and meet and greets. You get to meet the drivers and owners and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun, but it's going down today at Tucson Speedway, located 11955 South Houghton Road. Just if you go down to the drag strip, hang a right, which will be west, go out to the turn, the curve, and right there at Tucson Speedway. And you can't miss it. If you do, you don't need to be driving. Or you're going to have to borrow Jim's readers. 3/8 mile paved oval. But it is starting today. I've got four each family packs for people to get in. It's a pretty good little value. 719-1490. I have four family four packs. 1, 2, 3, 4. The first four that dials in gets four tickets. Actually, it's four tickets on each one of them. So good luck with that. Don't forget to get on there. Sorry about didn't put it out on the first hour for you guys that don't that only take the first hour and you got to go to work. Sorry about that, guys. Call me, though, and we can probably still work out something. So that's the tickets. All right, Jim. So now that I corrected what I forgot, it's been so doggone long since the season closed out, you know. But, hey, there's a swap meet next weekend also, March the 9th at Tucson Speedway. And it opens at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Swap meets at 6:30 till 2 o'clock, March 9th, 2024. Overnight parking set up available from 5:30 p.m. Friday, March 8th. And thanks to Bruce Tannenbaum, who I've known forever, for putting this thing together. All right, now let's go ahead with your part that you've got to do for Super Safe Saturday.
All right. Just folks, that swap meet's a good little swap meet if you're looking for something out there. A lot of guys with a lot of, there's a lot of old iron in this town, and there's a lot of people with a lot of things that you don't know they have. So that swap meet's a really good little venture. You might run across somebody that's got something you've been looking for years, or you might run across somebody that wants to buy something that you've been wanting to get rid of for years. So just, it's a good little swap meet. It's fun to go to, and I just throw that out there because I always find something that, like, I didn't even know that was out there. So, but at any rate, okay, so again, it's the second hour, and it's round two for Super Safe Saturday, folks. Super Safe Saturday, that means move over and slow down for a vehicle with flashing lights. That means everybody's car with flashing lights. And, you know, folks, when you see a car or a truck or a police officer or a fire engine with, you know, and they're blocking the road because they got their lights flashing because there's an incident in front of them and they're, you know, they're trying to keep you from running into it, do not wait until you get right to them to figure out that you need to get over. You know, you can see these lights for miles. At night, you can see them from at least a mile and a half away. You can see red and blue flashing lights forever. You can see amber lights flashing forever. With the high intensity LED lights, you can see them. In the daytime, you can see brake lights. You can see somebody braking in front of you. But if you see a guy, if you see cars or trucks or ambulance, fire, whatever, stopped in the road, don't wait till you get right to them to realize, oh, I should probably think about getting over into the lane and then smash into somebody else while you're trying to get over or cut somebody else off. Just be a little proactive and go, hey, oh, there's a car up there. Maybe I should get over out of the way. Same thing with for the bicyclist. If you see the bicyclist guys, or you see those guys up there, take a different route. If you're driving along and you see the bicyclist who's going to cut in front of you, you need to be very, very aware of them, because sometimes not everybody drives as good as Jerry. Trust me. I've been called a bad driver many times, although I don't have crashes under my belt. But
thanks a lot.
Jerry's a good driver, so we don't have to, he doesn't have to worry about it. He follows all the rules. So, anyway,
yeah, on the guy on the bicyclist. The other day, I was coming back from a doctor's appointment. I'm going down Old Spanish Road. There's two bicycles riding side by side on Old Spanish Road, and one guy is over, of course, he's over against the bank. The other guy is riding on the left side of the white line in my lane, and I had oncoming traffic. And I thought, oh, he'll see me, and then he'll just get over out of the way. No, he's sitting there talking to his buddy. People, if you're going to ride a bicycle, and I'm driving a 8,500-pound truck, I had rather tear up my vehicle than hit you. But you need to pay attention, because one of these days somebody is not going to be paying attention and you're going to collect about a 3,500-pound car at about 40 miles an hour on a bicycle. That's going to mess up your day, as Jim would say. So heads up. And for the ones of you that can't seem to turn your headlights on, when it gets dark outside or dusky dark, you have two cars coming at you. One's got your headlights on, one doesn't. The one that doesn't is the guy in front. The one that does is the guy in the back. You're going to see the guy in the back. Your eyes are going to adjust to that. All of a sudden, you've got this either silver or light brown car or like a gray is in the lane with no lights on. Don't save that darn bulb on it. Good gracious alive, people. Turn the lights on and let the rest of the motoring public know that you're there. Now, you're talking about people driving, people not using their turn signals and stuff, the brake lights being out on these things. Please inspect your lights. Find out, make sure that you've got your vehicle is capable of signaling to the other drivers what you're getting ready to do. That's what they put them on there for. And you can't buy a car without a turn signal switch. They don't make them. I think they get away with that when they got rid of the horse and buggy. But they're there. So please use your lights. The other day, in less than a quarter of a mile of driving, it was almost 6:10, 6:15 at night. In less than a quarter of a mile, and that's normally pretty good traffic right there, on Houghton Road, there was five vehicles that didn't have their lights on. About every third car did not have their lights on. But yet the ones that did, your eyeballs are adjusted to that. And these other people are like ghost riders. That's what I'm going to start calling them, ghost riders, ghost drivers, ghost owners, ghost operators. You know what causes the most wrecks in the world, right? On automobiles, is a nut behind the wheel, loose nut behind the wheel. That's been around since I've been in business over 50 years. Loose nut behind the wheel. When I first heard it, I thought, oh, my gosh, I got to check the steering wheel to make sure everything's tight now. No, they're talking about the person sitting in a seat driving or attempting to drive it. So if I seem a little sharp or something like this, people, I've been around a long time, been in a lot of cars. And right now, automotive deaths in vehicles are on the increase. Guess why? The geniuses out there have decided that they know more than the engineers and the test people that test these cars and seat belts. They don't wear their seat belts. And 18-wheelers is one of the biggest. They do it most. And that shocked me, because I figured if Jim's going to drive an 18-wheeler, I'm sure he wears a seatbelt, huh, Jim?
Yep. So, you know, it's funny you say that, Jerry. You'd think, now, I've been to a lot of crashes. I've been to a lot of wreck sites. I've flipped over trucks. I've flipped over tractor trailers, cars. Seen a lot of crashes. Been to a lot of wreck sites in my time. And, you know, what happens is the seatbelt doesn't just keep you from hitting the windshield. It keeps you in the seat. So what happens is in a car, the passenger compartment is pretty tight. So you're restrained just by the seat area, okay? Because there's a console in the middle usually. And you got the steering wheel, and it's pretty tight. In a big truck, there's a lot of room. And what happens is in a crash, if you're not wearing your seatbelt, because you got this huge mass, is you get thrown out of the seat. I've seen many times where the driver is thrown out of the seat to the passenger side or to the back, to the back of the truck, into the sleeper area. Well, you're not holding the steering wheel at that point in time. That you are now a passenger. In a vehicle that's moving, you know, down the road at a high rate of speed. So, and you wouldn't think that a big truck can be derailed by very easily, but it really can. You know, debris in the road will knock the front end right out of a truck. Tires, if crashing into a car, and you think that a car versus truck is usually always going to be in favor of the truck. Well, there's usually more damage to the car, but the truck can be put onto a path that you can't recover from. That's why you see him roll over in the ditch. Not, you know, the guy doesn't know what to do, or he's not in control of the vehicle anymore because he's not in the driver's seat anymore. And so that thing is just riding along on its own. And trucks get derailed for some of the really stupidest reasons, but the problem is when they do, the damage that they cause is, you know, 10 times more than a car because, well, they're 10 times as big as a car. So wearing a seatbelt's a really, really critical thing in all fashions. I mean, I know it's a pain in the butt sometimes. You know, some days you're just like, you know, I've seen people play the games. You know, how can I outlast the seatbelt dinger, right? Can I drive this thing until the dinger goes off? And sometimes they go off, and sometimes they don't. You put it on, it always goes off. And of course, you know, there's always the cheats. You know, you've seen them. The seat belt, the little bottle opener. It's the bottle opener that goes in the seat belt, right? So you just click it in there, so you don't have to put the seat belt on. Okay. I get it. It works, you know. It works, but today's seatbelts and cars
if it wasn't a safety option, Jim. Now we're giving away four tickets to the Tucson Speedway tonight. Okay, when you go out in a drag car, a regular your daddy's car that you want to take out the drag strip, it better have a seatbelt in it, or you don't go.
Hey, Jerry. Hey, Jerry, we got one pair of tickets left. That's it.
Got one ticket left. Okay, we got another. We got a single four-pack ticket to Tucson Speedway tonight for the opening season. Looks like the weather's going to be good. It's going to be nice. So get it. But if you want to find out if a seatbelt works, you need to go drive a race car. Go drive a race car. If you don't believe that seatbelt worked, and I remember when they brought seatbelts in, people, I'm a senior, and I'm going, oh my gosh! I mean, you know, you think about it, I mean, who needs a seatbelt? You can hang on to the steering wheel. Let me tell you something: the steering wheel is the weakest metal in a car is a steering wheel. You know why? Because when the people used to drive the older cars and they get any front-end collisions, they would eat the steering wheel and the column to go with it. It would just tear them all to pieces. So the people got it together, and the manufacturers, and so they started making the steering wheels the softest metal. And that's reading it tickled me when you see people that have the little club or whatever it is on there, because you can almost take a butter knife and cut their steering wheel. But, you know, still, it was a way all the club does, it keeps the honest people honest. Okay, but back to the steering wheel. Now, you get to the strongest metal in a car. Guess where that is? Guess where the strongest metal in a car is? As far as my knowledge, as far as I know, the strongest piece. It's the brake pedal. The brake pedal. And so if you're going to block something, get you the club that goes down to the brake pedal. I know a guy that lost his truck 4 times, and then he finally got the club that goes down to the brake pedal, comes up and locks in, and then his truck kept getting quit getting stolen. But, I mean, this was over a period of like a year before we ever come up with this, but he was telling me about it, and he brought it in, showed me how it works on the truck and stuff. So I bought one for my truck, and it works. So if you're dealing with this stuff, all right, now I've jumped off the subject. All right, back to the seatbelts. Wear your seatbelts.
Well, also with the seatbelt, so, you know, the seatbelt holds you in, and it's part of the safety restraint system. Right, so I don't know if you guys know this or not, but a lot of vehicle manufacturers have active seatbelts. So when the car gets in a crash and the airbags deploy, the seatbelt actually retracts. It actually sucks you into the back to the seat to keep you restrained, so you don't get that neck injury, right? Or limit it as much as it can. So you don't
right.
you're because you, as when the car is moving down the road and you stop it suddenly, you're still moving it down the road. If the car is moving at 40 and it stops suddenly, you're still moving at 40. That's what the seatbelts keep you from falling into the steering wheel. And Jerry's right. That steering wheel is the weakest material, so it will break away during a crash so that you're less injured. And that's why you see them all bent and mangled, okay? But the seatbelt will hold you in, and it will actually tighten up against you. If you've never seen one, that's why in a crash, when you go to the seatbelt, the retracting system on a seatbelt will no longer work. The seat will no longer retract after a crash. When you've been wearing one, even if you haven't been wearing one, it will no longer function. The reason why that is because it's a one-time use. I know this sounds crazy. Well, it's a one-time use. You take it out and you throw it away because that seatbelt has been compromised, and we don't want to chance your life on, you know, an old seatbelt. Used to not be that way, folks. Seatbelts would last forever. You got in a crash, you'd put it back over your, you know, like Jerry and I remember, right, when it was just a lap belt, you know. And then if you had the really fancy one, the shoulder harness was tucked up on the up above your door, right? It was up in the headline.
Yep.
You folded it up on the headline. Dodge's had it, Chevy's had it, everybody had it. You know, it was tucked up there, and then when you wanted to, you could go ahead and put it on. But nobody ever did. They just left it up there. It was a pain in the butt to take down. So anyways, the seatbelt is part of the design of the passenger's compartment, which means if you see it attached to a seat, you know, it's part of the seat system, which means it holds you in the seat. Also, and I know this sounds weird, and you're not going to believe this, but engineers get paid a lot of money, and they go to a lot of work to design systems. Right? So when the federal government comes out and says, we want vehicles to be safer, you vehicle manufacturer need to do something to make it better. We're not going to tell you what to do, but you need to do something. So everybody in the room sits around and looks at each other and goes, well, Bob, what are we supposed to do today? And Bob says, well, let's make the seatbelts better. Let's redesign the passenger's compartment so that all of the systems work together in conjunction to keep the occupant safe. So So the guy goes, okay, well, let's get some crash test dummies and let's go crash some cars. So they go crash some cars, and you see the pictures on the TV. You know, oh, they crash it into the side, they pull it sideways, and they flip it over, and they look at the paint markings on the crash test dummies, and they have all these, you know, used to be they had 3 sensors, and now they got like 5,000 sensors testing every single part of the crash test dummy, right? A guy comes back to Bob and says, Bob, here's what happens in your car. Bob says, okay, team, here's what our problems are. In our vehicle, we noticed neck injuries. We noticed rib injuries. We noticed wrist and forearm injuries. Okay, let's redesign our system. So believe it or not, when they build the system, they build the system with the seatbelt intact. So you put the seatbelt on, they run the system. Bob says, okay, crash test dummies, go do your job. They come back and say, yep, Bob, your team did a great job. All these systems have been all of your new modifications to your passenger restraint system are compliant, and you did a great job. And you know what that relies on? You doing what Bob wanted you to do, which was put on your seatbelt. Because I can tell you for a fact, when you haven't put that seatbelt on and you go sideways, the airbag's going to hit you from a different angle. The curtain bag is going to hit you from a different angle, which means that it's no longer effective. Oh, I hit my head and I went through the windshield because the side impact was from the left front, and I went to the side, or I was the right front, I went to the side, and I evaded the airbag and I hit the windshield because you didn't use the system that was designed to hold you in place. No different than if you don't put the bolt in the alternator to keep the belt tight, or you didn't put the tensioner on right. The system's built to hold you in a certain way at a certain time, and if you don't put it all back together just right, it doesn't work. It doesn't work any time, any way, or any shape. And if you don't put all the lug nuts on the wheel, it falls off. I can get by with two. Two studs broke off is no big deal. Sure it is. For a while, then it's a big deal. All of a sudden, it's a big deal. Well, why did the wheel fall off? Well, I only had 2 lug nuts holding on. Gee, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that wasn't a smart idea. The system was built to work in a certain way, and you gotta follow the rules. I mean, granted, not every system is perfect, but you know, if you can't follow the guidelines that the guy set in place to keep you safe, then you're not going to be safe, and there's nothing he can do about it. You can jump up and down, and you get mad and scream at him and say, Bob, you should have told me that I should have wore my seatbelt. And he said, I did. Says it right over the visor. Flip the visor down. It says right there, everything about what you need to do. The guy who sold you the car says, put your seatbelt on. The owner's manager says, put your seatbelt on. I can't keep you from putting your seatbelt on. Now, Toyota had the deal. It was Toyota, I believe, that had the automatic retracting one. Do you remember those, Jerry? Where they roll forward across the top of the
they have a little rail.
The little rail on top.
You
of
put
the,
it on and it goes across the top. You just lock it in the box. It's great.
It rolled right back across and worked and the seatbelt the shoulder strap came to you, right? It rolled right back. Well, they discontinued them because they're expensive to do. The motors wore out. If the motor failed, you know, during the normal operation and you didn't have your seatbelt, well, that was an issue. So they got rid of them. And, you know, it's like, well, it worked perfect when I bought the car, but, you know, 200,000 miles and 20 years later, it quit working because I've opened and closed the door 43,000 times. Okay, it makes sense. It wore out. Folks, you got to fix that stuff. Oh, no. I'm not responsible for fixing anything. I'm only responsible when I can find a defect. And, folks, when you see those big billboards with those guys that go out there that says they've recovered lots and lots of money, billions of dollars. Every bus stop, every bus, every billboard, when you see them, and I'm not knocking them for what they do. What I'm saying is that you're the pond which they fish. You are their customer, and your misfortune is their fortune. And I live in that world. When your car breaks down, I get to make money.
Hey,
I don't wish your car would break down. I don't wish your car would break down, but, you know, unfortunately, I have to be there to help you, just like they do. But their technique's a little different than mine. That's all I'm going to say. But anyway, so if you're going to use the seatbelt system and the safety constraints of a vehicle, you got to use it to the way it was built, which means don't put on the seatbelt. It's not going to work. It's not going to work as effective. Yeah, you might be okay, but I guarantee you the guy that built the car did not say, well, how about if we just don't have a seatbelt at all? Well, how good is it? Well, it's, you know, 64% less effective.
Sucks.
They
were there. They did that.
They did that. Exactly. Every scenario that you can come up with, they have tried. They've tried every single. They've hit them from every angle. They've tried them and you know, you never see this in the TV footage, but they test every body style. They test tall people and short people. They test heavy people. They test light people. They test little kids. They test everybody because not everybody's the same. And you know, if you're a 6'2" guy like Jerry, and you're getting a Toyota Corolla and that seatbelt doesn't fit you, well then, hey, we need to take that into account. You know, on the other hand, if you're not 6'2" like me, I'm not 6'2", so that has to be taken into account as well. So they test all this stuff. And they go out of their way because they get paid a lot of money to make sure that you're safe because they don't want the billboard guy coming after them. So, you know,
That's right. Do
us all a favor. Put your belt on. If it doesn't work, if it won't ratchet, if it seems like it's worn because you've used it 80,000 times, go buy a new one. Go take it up to Brian, take it up to Jerry, take it up to Parker. They're not incredibly difficult to change. They're a little expensive. You know, you're probably going to spend for a new one, not one out of a wrecking yard, guys. Okay, just let me just throw this out there. I know that the ones in the wrecking yard might be great. We're talking about you or your family. So go buy the new one. Go buy the new genuine OEM one from the dealership. You know, I know there are rebuild services that will do it, and they might work just great. Again, do you really want to risk everything on something that was wore out? No, you don't. You really don't. You know, I guarantee you, nobody goes in with the idea that they want to get hurt later or want somebody to get hurt later. So,
Jim, ideally, ideally, you want a 5-piece harness like race car drivers wear. They looked at that one time and they said, well, it's not practical because everybody don't wear a fire suit. Okay, so, you know. But having spent time in a late model and having spent time in coming up through the ranks and having some heck of a crashes, I can tell you, seat belts, once you drive a race car, when you get out, you feel naked if you don't put on your seatbelt when you go in these cars. I mean, I've got a 68 Mustang. It's got that little extra seatbelt hanging off the top of the ceiling. It's off of the roof of the car in the interior. And it's held on by a little spring clip. When I go out in my little Mustang, I take that top, pull it down, and hook it. So I've got my lap belt and my shoulder belt on that thing. But after driving a race car with a 5-point harness and being in wrecks at 100 miles an hour, you know a little bit about crashes. And, I mean, you can get knocked out while you're racing with all of that garbage on. I mean, with everything locked in. The only thing we didn't have was a Hunge device at the time. And, you know, but you can get knocked out. But when you're driving, if you don't wear your seatbelt, let's simplify this thing. You don't wear your seatbelt. I don't wear my seatbelt. I'm Jerry. I'm driving a 3/4-ton Dodge, and I'm driving down the road, and I'm only running 40 miles an hour. Speed limit's 45, but I normally go about 5 miles an hour under in town because I don't trust the other driver. I don't trust Jim. And so you get into a little you hit something, you blow a tire. Just blow a tire. You hadn't even made contact with anybody else. You blow a tire,
It sucks you to the right side of the road and bounces you off a wall or a curb or another car. Who's driving your car? You're bouncing around inside the cab. People, this is real. I mean, it's real. I've heard the old story about, okay, well, let's see, you know, the one that I didn't like is the one when once they get in the car doors would lock, you couldn't open them up. I'm going, I need a 5-pound hammer. You put me in a car, that door better come open when I want it to, or I will open the windows and anything else that's in the way. And that concerned me. Ford had it. Ford had one where the automatic doors would lock and all this stuff, and you couldn't get out. It wouldn't release. So I don't know what ever happened to that, but I guess they got them where they opened up because I haven't heard anybody complaining about them. You have a responsibility to drive your car safely. Keep one thing in mind. Those seat belts are extremely expensive. You've already paid for them. Why not take advantage of them? Oh, maybe you put them in the same category as you do the turn signal. I don't need that thing, you know. How about arm? I remember driving a car that the turn signals were broke on it when I was a kid. And I don't even remember. It was in the 40s or 50s or something like that, an old farm vehicle. Didn't even have the turn signals. You roll the window down, and you had arm signals. I remember taking my driver's test, and he said, don't use the turn signal. You use the arm signals. Now I'm dating myself. See, Jim, you're not near as old as I am. But, no, on that, you know, I'll tell you something else. I'm sitting here mouthing and forgetting. You know, Spectra Minor Road Auto Collision Center. Spectra Minor Road, 520-744-4454. If you have a collision, have Jim pick it up at 748-1100 Frontier Towing. Deliver it over to Spectra Minor Road Auto Collision Center, and let that crew take over. All you got to do is call your insurance company and say, I'm sending it over there. Send it over there. You get a claim number, call, just tell Spectrum, give them the claim number, let them handle it from there. Take all the stress out of this thing. Don't be, you know, don't be that way. Just get it handled. Parker Automotive Service Center, Parker AZ, parkerautoaz.com. 5101 East Speedway, 520-323-1960. 520-323-1960 is the phone number over there. You talk to Scott. Remember, Scott's the one who said just do a little bit of maintenance all the time. Just a little bit. Make sure you do your oil changes. Oh, maybe one time you go in and see, oh, my belt's about ready to be changed. Let's get this changed and get that done. Then you don't have all of that hitting you at one time. But Parker Automotive, excellent shop at 5101 East Speedway. Lynn's Auto Brokerage, lynnsautobrokerage.com. DesertRV.com. Desert RV specializes in toy haulers. Lynn's Auto Brokerage specializes in automobiles, four-wheel drive, Jeeps, pickups, cars. Everything is on the website. You can go in and check their inventories at both places. Automotive specialist, Mr. Test First Don't Guess. Just don't ask him about reprogramming a computer. If you do, you're going to have to make sure you're muted somewhere, because I'm going to tell you something. He is violent when it comes to that. Evidently, they've changed a lot of the rules. And, well, that's nothing surprising to me, because I'm always reading his garbage. And, you know, and I'm going, why'd they do this? Why'd they do this? Why'd they do this? People, follow the money. Follow the money. Why do you have to have all this technical data, and you take something into Simmons, then I've got to, they just added this new thing that you've got to do. It's only $1,200 if you want the technical data so you can fix this car. And some of the cars, manufacturers, and I'm not going to call the names, but they're foreign. They don't even give you the information to fix the car. They want to argue about it. You have, and it's a fine line between the environmental stuff and the runability of a car. Well, if a car's not running and it won't run, and then it does fire up, why can't I get it you know, what's the deal here? And so that's just another thing that the technicians in these garages have to get in with. Okay, how do we get into this information? Well, since if you're a volume shop and you have this volume like Parker has, you have the volume like Simmons has, you have the volume like Brian Fuller has, and a lot of your garages that you've been using for years, they have been forced to do this. And like anything else that somebody forces down your throat, it costs money, and you don't have an option. And so you get everything, you're trying to get it all up, and then you have these subscriptions that you have to every year. I've seen subscription roll in at almost $6,000 a year. Just for subscription shit, all this garbage. But that's on everything. But they're renewable. We have them where you can buy a certain section of something if you need it. You don't have to renew everything like they used to the first time. Now you can buy segments of about $150 to $250. Well, you take your vehicle in, and they'll say, oh, well, this information is priority. We're going to have to call Ford Motor Company or GM or Chrysler or BMW or Volkswagen or something. And we're going to need an extra $250 because that's what they're going to charge me for this information in order to fix your car. So, you know, up pops the devil. Welcome to the automotive repair industry. Automotive Specialist AZ.com. Automotive Specialist AZ.com. Mr. Test First Don't Guess. And he's a lot of fun to talk to because that guy he's a volume shop. He does a lot of stuff. His shop is used for repairs that nobody else can figure out on the west side of Tucson. Or they've been referred to from two or three different places. Okay, Brian's on the west side. I'll do it. And you've got this problem with it. I even told a guy one time, Brian can't fix it. Just go ahead and sell the car. Because nobody can fix it if he can't do it. You know, I've been around 50 years. You know who you can depend on to get things done. You know but technology is coming faster than I am aging. It's there. You can't keep up with everything. So you have your own little network that you deal with. You know, Bill Nelson Automotive that I used to. One guy had been in 1 week longer than the other, and we used to argue about that. We argued about that for 40 years. But when he would get ready to buy a computer with all the information system in it, he would call me and said, okay, what kind of computer you got? I tell him. He said, well, I've been researching, and I can get this other one, and that'll give us double duty because not two technical data computers are the same. So he would get them. He called me and said, okay, I got blah, 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 blah. We'd go in and look at it. It'd be different. Okay, we'd send him ours. He'd send me his, and that's how we did for years and years and years. We had to double these things because the information coming from your manufacturers wasn't always the same. It wasn't always the same. Well, then you've got this. Oh, well, this is the best we can do. You technicians are going to have to figure it out. Class, technical training, all this is mandatory. You know, I've talked to these schools about their automotive classes and tell them that education, current, to stay current on the education that they offer for these training classes is no longer an option. It's mandatory if you're planning on staying in the automotive repair industry. It's a constant training source. So anyway, now that I got off on that little subject, that's how you stay up on these vehicles. Merrill's Automotive, if you need parts, if you need spark plugs, Merrill's. If you need an engine, go to Merrill's. They'll tell you where to get one. Transmissions, brake hardware, a lot of technical data, a lot of replacement parts. That's the ones that they made originally and screwed up, and then all of a sudden now, okay, I got a technical service bulletin. It comes out and said, replace it with this updated part. It's not a safety item. So it's really not a recall. However, you still got to replace it. And the other thing that I forgot, but just I didn't. I just housed it in a different area of my brain. Seat belts. Did you know the seat belt recall on the trigger system for the seat belt is still on? There's over, I can't even remember how many million cars are driving around with an active recall on these seat belts. On just the explosion part of it that fires these seat belts. A seat belt fires in milliseconds. Milliseconds is not a second. Millisecond is like a millisecond. In other words, it's faster than you blink your eyes. That's how fast that seatbelt fires. Okay? So with the seatbelts and safety and pack rats, boy, we've covered a myriad of things this morning, Jim.
Yes, we have.
Let's change it to wash the windshield today.
Wash the windshield. Okay.
Yeah, just wash the windshield. I mean, it's got this other stuff is depressing. One, I had a car, and these ratings, when you're buying a car, look at these ratings. They do mean something. And it'll show the safety ratings on it. It'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars on it and stuff like that. I had a Honda, and I'm going to say Honda because I had good luck with this Honda, and it didn't kill my daughter. She rolled that thing. She was pushed into a truck. She run up on the wheel of the truck and rolled that thing over on South Plumber, I think it was. No. Well, anyway, it's off of South Cherry. And when I went to get her after we found out, I went to get her, and she was driving my Accord, Honda Accord. And when we bought that car, it had a 5-star rating for safety as far as seatbelts and stuff. She had her seatbelts on. She rolled that thing because a guy run her right up into the big truck. She rolled up over the wheel of the truck and rolled that thing right in the middle of the road. At about, 25 mile an hour, something like that. When we went to get it, I said, okay. And I looked at the car and I said, it's got scars on the paint. What's the damage? On that Honda, when all the bags started going off, my daughter said it felt like rolling down a hill in a barrel with everything just exploded at one time. Side curtains, front curtains, she said everything went off. And the only thing it did is it burned her eyes because of the propellant that was used to activate the seat belts. However, all four doors on that Honda would open and close. All four windows in the side doors were not broken out. It had a cracked front window. And this was a rollover in a Honda. And so when you're looking for safety, those little stars that you see, I've seen them verified. And so when you're looking for cars and this old crap of, okay, well, Jerry, when you bought your daughter that 66 Thunderbird, that was a heavy car. Yeah, it was about 5,200 pounds. Oh, that had to be really safe. No, it wasn't. My Honda Civic that I had was safer than that Thunderbird because the Honda Civic has a breakaway. It's when you get hit in the front is designed to collapse down under the cabin where the people are sitting in. Volvo used to have roll bars or roll panels in the doors, and they did that for years and years and years. I mean, you could almost buy one of those and go to the racetrack with it. But they were one of the safest vehicles, and I understand that later on in years, they took some of that away. Are you familiar with this, Jim?
Yes.
Because of the weight?
The weight, yeah. Gas mileage. Causes too
gas mileage and stuff. They started reducing that stuff. And that, I mean, of course, race cars, they get 2 miles per gallon.
so the concept is you're right. There, Jerry, there's a lot of cars that had internal bars in them that were built in, you know, in the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did is they redesigned the structure so that, you know, the bar could be replaced in favor of forming metal in a way that made it as strong or gave the same protection, but reduced the weight. Because you got to reduce the weight, because here's what we know. You can, and Jerry will be the first one to tell you this, you can build more horsepower or you can make it lighter. The only two ways to go faster. You want to go faster? You build more horsepower or you cut your weight down. Those are the only two things you can do. Right, with the exception of rolling resistance, which is usually a given. You know, you can't reduce rolling resistance unless you run on rails. If you're running on, that's why, no lie, folks, that is why trains roll on rails. It's because of the rolling resistance. That has almost a zero resistance compared to tires and wheels. Just saying. But if you want to run a race car, you want to run a car fast, you build more horsepower, you get rid of weight. It takes... And it's an exponential curve on horsepower. If you're at 10 and you want to go to 20, it might take you 3 horsepower. If you're at 100 and you want to go to 120, it'll take you 300 horsepower, because it's just that much more difficult with wind and inertia and resistance. And there's a bunch of calculations in there that I'm sure Jerry can give you the rundown on that I can't off the top of my head. But I do know that it takes more power to make you go faster. So the faster you want to go, the more it takes. But reduction of weight is a significant factor in making you go faster easier. So because the rule today, folks, is in 2027, you're going to have to get, I think the manufacturers are at 27 miles to the gallon, I think is where the new rules are going to come into play. So a gas-powered car will have to get 27 miles per gallon on average. And, you know, these guys are looking at the cars going, there's no way to get it. We can't hit that number. We can't hit that number without, you know, completely redesigning the entire system of the car. Or wait, let's go electric. Let's go electric. You know, it's all political. So And not that I'm saying electric's bad, but I'm saying is that if you design a system that is unattainable, then and the other option is and this is the other option, then you get shoved to the other option. So, car manufacturers are very astute at trying to shave every ounce of weight off a car and still make it work. So, they're good at it. They're really good at it. You know, we complain about cars all the time. We complain about car manufacturers. And we complain about, you know, the Fords and the GMs and the Kias and, you know, the Toyotas and the Hyundais. We complain about them all the time, you know. But in reality, if you sat down with them and went through their process, you would be so amazed at what they really do. It's quite intriguing. It really is.
Oh yeah. You know, the thing about. Anytime there's a major change, somebody has to pay the ride. You have R&D, research and development. Somebody has to pay that ride. I mean, it's like your pharmaceuticals that try to come up with some of the medicine that they come up with. I'll put it that way. And, you know, some of it works, some of it don't. But they say, oops, and they just go back and come up with plan two. Well, automotive industry. It's an industry of R&D. My brother used to work in the automotive industry in the R&D section. And he designed a lot of stuff. He used to have a briefcase, actually a suitcase, had some of the stuff in it that he actually made. And he said the hard part of R&D when you're doing this is making the stuff that will fail at between 70 and 100,000 miles. I mean, you needed to fail because you couldn't sell the cars to Denton. And he said that was the hard part. He said making stuff and that and keeping the weight down, like Jim's talking about. But in 1980, Ford come up with this brainchild on a half-ton truck.
Well, what we'll do is we'll just go ahead and start boring holes out in the frame. That'll lighten it up. It did. And then they had something like a almost equivalent to a Pinto running gear in them as far as the brakes and the brake calipers. It was off of some little small car that they had. I can't even remember now what it was, but it was a small car. And when the customer found out about it, he got so mad because he'd only had the truck like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And I don't even know what it was in there for. All I know is he was looking at stuff and he was fussing, and then he got on the phone and called Ford. But it was something to do with the braking system, and the brakes were so small. I'm looking at that and I'm going, you got to be kidding me. And that was in 1980. Well, when you look at all of this stuff and it starts coming home to you, and you have to take everything with kind of a grain of salt. Okay, new technology. Nothing was perfect when they made it. You had the space shuttle that blew up. And that's some pretty intelligent people there. So it's really not an intelligent type thing. It's what happens. And this is what happens. So you get these automobiles and you say, okay, I'm good to go now. This thing's good. When you get a notification on a recall, take it in and have it done.
Have it done.
Because a recall, and you can write this down, a recall is a safety issue. If a tie rod comes off of my truck, my Dodge truck, because I ignored the recall, that's going to be, somebody's going to be able to use that, saying, okay, if you're an idiot, you didn't know that you had a recall. Okay, but if you have a vehicle and you're wondering if the airbag is legitimate, just take the number, your ID card or ID off your car, and call the National Highway Transportation Safety Authority recalls and go in there and look and see if yours has been recalled. And if it has been recalled, then you can call the manufacturer. If it's a Ford, call Ford, Chevy, and so on. Call them and ask them, when can I get this fixed? A recall you don't pay for, they do. Okay? And as far as how long will a recall last? Okay, I asked that one time, and I never did get a clear answer, but I figured it out. If you get something that comes in and it's on, let's say it's on brakes, and they say, it's covered under warranty. We'll do it on that. And then so they replace it under warranty. And you say, okay, does this continue on now? I mean, what's a new warranty on that? You'll probably get half a dozen answers. But what I found out, that if it says lifetime warranty is 5 years, 100,000 miles, okay, originally, the GM on the Duramax come out with an extended warranty on it because of an injector issue, and they actually increased the 100,000 to 200,000 on the injector, so they must have got them fixed. And everything changes. Everything, just because it was what it was, 10 years ago, it doesn't mean anything now. I mean, it could mean nothing. I will tell you what the manufacturers look at. If you sell Simmons a Dodge and you send him a notification that says you got a recall on his Dodge, it's Simmons' responsibility to do that. It's just like any owner's manual says, okay, Jerry, you're going to change your oil every 7,500 miles. And I don't do it. Guess who's going to pick up the tab on that one when the engine blows? Okay. You have a responsibility, and believe it or not, you pay for this warranty anyway. So you've got this warranty on this vehicle. You're responsible for it. You've already paid for it. Use the warranty. I've had people come in from actually driving a company that I won't call what the brand was, but he come in and said, and I remember talking to him. I said, hey, this is a few years ago. And I said, this is covered under the new car warranty. You're still covered. You don't even have 25,000 miles on this car. this thing is still covered. And he looked at me and he says, I know it is. I refuse to take it back to the manufacturer to have it fixed. I refuse. And he said, and I said, okay. And I think at that time, it was like a $400-some repair ticket. And that was a long time ago. And but there's people who have enough, and they say, nope, 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 nope. But you've got to remember that you're paying, at one time, it was 23 cents on a dollar was warranty. Okay? 23 cents on a dollar. So do they care if you use it or not? Nope. It's all profit. Okay? So this is what you need to take care of. Well, Jim, now that we've done scalded the pack rats, there's no easy way on that. I want to wish everybody good luck with the pack rats. If you find something or you know something that worked, you give us a call next week and let's talk about it and share it with everybody else, because pack rats are alive and well and doing a lot of damage in Tucson right now. Maybe we can help Jim keep him eating his. What, Jim?
They're going to continue to do a lot of damage. They're not going anywhere, folks. The pack rat population is not leaving Tucson, Arizona, or the state of Arizona. They're here to stay. You just got to deal with them or combat them. You know, they're not leaving. They didn't pick up their bags and go, oh, well, let's move on to, or let's relocate to a different state. Nope. They're here.
Uh-huh.
They're going to continue to do what they do. So be aware. Because they're tough. They're real tough. So.
All right. Well, I hope all the tickets got gone for the race tonight. People going out there enjoy. And for the ones of you, don't forget the swap meet next week. That's going to start at 5:00 in the morning at the racetrack. And the Jim was saying there's a lot of stuff out there. If you're a car nut or you just want something to do in the morning, go out there and just spend some time. They do have a couple of food trucks there, by the way. So until next week, everybody just enjoy. Please turn your headlights on. Turn your light system on when it's getting just dusk.